In the book of Exodus, where we've been studying, we've been reminded that God is the revealer. He revealed himself to Moses at the burning bush. He revealed himself to the children of Israel, even while they were in captivity in Egypt. God revealed himself to them as they watched God's mighty hand at work to set them free. God revealed himself also during that amazing time when their backs were up against the Red Sea, and here comes the Egyptian army chasing after them, and God opens the waters, parts the waters before them. So we've been looking at God's revelation, and we've been reminded that God's revelation is always meant to bring about our liberation. He reveals so that more and more we would be set free. It was true for the Israelites of old, and we're discovering how it's also true in our own lives and our own stories. But getting free doesn't mean that that is an easy journey. That journey to freedom can be filled with all kinds of different challenges. Getting to the place God wants us to be free requires something of us that as he reveals, we respond to his revelation. He reveals, we respond. And what our response needs to become more and more is that our response needs to be faith-filled obedience to whatever God would show us. Faith-filled obedience. I believe that even the Stark family and getting to lay hands and pray and send them out and hear their story is that we can rejoice knowing that this is a family who has pledged to walk in faith-filled obedience. Is this move going to be their last move? Who knows? But here's what I do know. God's going to continue to reveal things. To which the required response for them to continue to walk in the freedom and wholeness and blessing that God has for them is to continue to respond with faith-filled obedience. This is how we grow in our freedom, our wholeness, our maturity. This is how we grow to be more like Jesus. And it's the story of Exodus. The story of God leading his people into freedom from captivity and oppression to their promised land. God revealed and the Israelites responded. Sometimes in faith-filled obedience and other times not so much. Now we come to today and this part of the message has to do with after they've gone through that Red Sea miraculous experience of salvation. Now they enter a 40-year journey in the wilderness toward their freedom. This was not the easy path to their freedom. The easy path we know from not only geologists who would tell us, but also there's indication in God's word as well that literally it would have been about a 12-day hike to get from where they were to the promised land. But it took them 40 years. 12 days or 40 years. And it's kind of like God saying, you choose your path. As I reveal who I am, how will you respond? Do you want a really long and arduous road to get to freedom? Or do you want to take a path that would be far quicker and probably far more pleasant? But God not only was revealing things to them about himself over those years, he was revealing things in their heart. The author of Hebrews wrote something about the Israelites and their time in the wilderness that I want to start with before we look at a single passage in Exodus. I want you to look at this. It's Hebrews 3, 15 through 19. And he's writing directly about Hebrews. this time of the Israelites, what we would call their wilderness wanderings. And this is what it says. Remember what it says today when you hear his voice. Don't harden your hearts as Israel did when they rebelled. And who was it who rebelled against God even though they had heard his voice? Wasn't it the people Moses led out of Egypt? And who made God angry for 40 years? Wasn't it the people who sinned, whose corpses lay in the wilderness? And to whom was God speaking when he took an oath that they would never enter his rest? Wasn't it the people who disobeyed him? So we see that because of their unbelief, they were not able to enter his rest. And when it says they were not able to enter his rest, that word rest is that kind of all-encompassing word that is used by the author of Hebrews several different times of entering your rest. It's a way of describing your promised land. The promised land that God has for you, that place of rest where there's wholeness, where there is freedom, where you're walking in his grace, and the place that he has for you is described as his rest. Doesn't that sound good? Who wants to be that place of God's rest in your life where you are not wrestling, but you are at rest? Well, there was many of those Israelites who left Egypt who never made it to their place of rest, to that promised land, because of what they experienced. Let me just point out a few things and go ahead and leave that slide up. Right at the very beginning, he's quoting actually a little piece of Psalms right there at the top when he says, today, when you hear his voice, today, when you hear his voice, when you hear God's voice, today. That should be a clue that that is our normative expectation, because God is the revealing God. He is continually revealing things about who he is, who we are, and what his unfolding plan is for our life and the decisions that we're facing. He is the revealer. So today, when you hear his voice, then it goes on, says, don't harden your hearts as Israel did. See, their response was to rebel against God's leading through his revealed will. They rebelled. Rather than walking in that faith-filled obedience, the author actually refers to their rebellion as sin and disobedience. Then the author finishes with this, and it's that very last phrase that's underlined there, that we see that because of their unbelief, they were not able to enter his rest. When we say no to God, and what he is revealing to us, it's actually exposing our unbelief. It's an issue of faith when we say no to God. It's our lack of faith and our trust in God and his ability to care for us, to resource us, and to be there with us every step of the way. Because even though the journey may be challenging as it's laid out in front of us, if God is with us and is there to care for us, we can always, always say, God, I want to respond in that faith-filled obedience and never harden my heart to what you would have for me. Because when we do, it's exposing something of our lack of faith. So now as we turn to Exodus with kind of that as the backdrop, we're looking at just one small story that takes place in the very first week of their 40 years. Cool? It's a story about whether they will trust God to interestingly provide water. I think many of us would say that probably water is the basic necessity of life, right? Without water, we perish. You know, you can go a long time without food, some of us longer than others, right? But without water for just a few short days, I mean, your organs stop functioning. Your body begins to turn off key components, and it's not much longer after that that you expire, right? Water is essential. And I believe that the very first thing that they had to encounter was a test of their faith, of whether God, by the way, who had just miraculously rescued them from their captors, who had just amazingly opened up the Red Sea and let them pass through, and where they had this huge worship celebration on the other side of the Red Sea. But here they are with this question: will God now provide for us what we need as a basic essential element for our lives? Let's see what happens. It's in Exodus chapter 15, starting in verse 22. It says, "Then Moses led the people of Israel away from the Red Sea, and they moved out into the desert of Shur. They traveled in this desert for 3 days without finding any water. When they came to the oasis of Marah, the water was too bitter to drink. So they called this place Marah, which means bitter. Then the people fell on their faces before God and cried out to him." No, they didn't. Oh, that would have been a much shorter, happier route to the promised land. No, then the people complained. And they turned against Moses. "What are we going to drink?" they demanded. So Moses cried out to the Lord for help. And the Lord showed him a piece of wood. Moses threw it into the water, and this made the water good to drink. It's this miraculous provision of taking polluted water, and the stick had nothing to do with it except Moses' faith-filled obedience to what God was revealing to him in that moment. Take the stick, toss it in. There was nothing of miraculous property about that stick. It had to do with his faith-filled response of obedience to doing what God revealed. The very thing that all the other Israelites were not doing. So God miraculously takes his polluted water and makes it like Dasani. Made the water good to drink. It was there at Marah that the Lord set before them the following decree as a standard to test their faithfulness to him. He said, "If you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God," if you listen carefully to my voice, meaning this, today, when I reveal something to you, listen carefully, because I am the revealing God. If you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, obeying his commands and keeping all his decrees. Listen to this beautiful promise that he makes to them. "Then I will not make you suffer any of the diseases I sent on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." Man, and in that word healing, it's a lot more to do than just with our physical bodies, although it includes our physical bodies, but includes everything that we talked about entering God's rest. Healing for our minds, our anxiousness, our depression, things that fight against us. Healing us of our fears. Healing of us of all areas of brokenness and of relational struggles. God is the one who is our healer. And he says, you have a choice. When you hear my voice, please, please, he says, keep my decrees, obey my commands, so that I can bring you into that place of rest. But what did they do when they encountered this time of testing? You know, we could say everything's all fine and good until someone gets thirsty. What do we do when we come to that time of testing? The amazing thing to me is what they had just come out of before they hit this 3-day test and began to complain. They had just come out of this amazing time of worship on the other side of the Red Sea where God had dramatically saved them. And we actually have the lyrics. We're not going to go through all the lyrics of because there's songs that they sang before the Lord when God rescued them 3 days earlier. But literally in the verse preceding this account, there's part of the lyrics that are captured there that are, sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. Beautiful, kind of poetic language. The God didn't just kind of lead us into victory. No, he triumphed gloriously. He is the glorious, triumphant victor. And this is just what they've been singing 3 days earlier. 3 days. They went from, because I'm happy. Right? To 3 days there. I'm so unhappy. This morning, we sang Unstoppable God. Unstoppable God. The God of miracles, the God of victory. What are we going to be singing on Wednesday? 3 days from now, what will be our song? Are we going to remember that God is triumphant and glorious? He is our victor. And that he is unchanging. Or what are we going to do when we face trials as they did? Rather than seeking God at the time of their need, it says the people complained. Here's what complaining is. Complaining is the verbal expression of one's dissatisfaction of their circumstance. So whenever like life and circumstance hit us wrong and we confront some trouble and we're dissatisfied, complaining is the verbal expression that I am unhappy. Complaining is a rather natural thing to do. But before we open our mouths to make our dissatisfaction public, something has already transpired in our hearts. Do you remember what the author of Hebrews said before he talked about their sin and rebellion and everything? And he said, do not harden your heart. When you hear God revealed, do not harden your heart. See, something happens pre-complaining. There's this inner decision that we've already concluded. And our complaining is just kind of how we make that decision that we made public. It reminds me of what Jesus said in Matthew 12, 34, when he said that it's the out of the overflow of your heart that the mouth speaks. If complaining is coming out of my mouth, it is revealing something that is broken in my heart. That there's something that I am not believing God for any longer. And once I make that decision, things really get challenging in my life. I want you to go ahead and put up that slide, Karen. We all hit trouble when we're going down the path of life. Some of you woke up to it this morning. Right? Some of you, it will be waiting for you when you get back to the parking lot. Trouble. It's always hanging out there kind of waiting for us. You know what? And it's part of our life. In fact, when we read God's word, Jesus is really clear that all of you will face trouble in your lives. In fact, in the book of James, we even read that, hey, we're supposed to rejoice when we face all kinds of troubles because it is for our testing. God is like wanting us to like, hey, show me what you're made of. Show me what's in your heart. Show me. And it's like, hey, if everything is always good, if we're never thirsty, we're never complaining because we're lacking water. It's only when the test comes that that revelation will happen of really what's inside of us. We all hit troubles, but what I see in this is that there's a clear fork in the road that happens when we hit the trouble. We're either going to go towards God, what we've been describing is that faith-filled obedience, to say, God, I don't understand this, and I don't get it right now, but I'm going to lean into you. Even in this moment of trouble, God, I'm going to lean into you and discover my pathway towards freedom. Or we say no to God. We say no to him. We say, no, we're going to go our own way. We're going to go any other way. And what happens is when we take that other path, that's when that decision in our heart has kind of been cast. No, I'm not going to go God's direction on this. I'm not going to respond in faith. And so when we go the other way, oftentimes what will happen is then the complaining will begin to come forth from our lips. Because we already processed the decision in our heart, rooted in unbelief that God's going to be able to take care of us even during the midst of our trouble. And once we make that decision of which way we're going to go, then things like complaining will begin to come out. And all kinds of other things as well, as described by the author of Hebrews, who said, man, when you said no to God, here's the things that happened. You rebelled against him. You sinned. You disobeyed. Things ain't going well for you. And because of this, some of you were not able to enter into God's rest. Isn't it amazing that God uses trouble and challenges to reveal the things in our heart, but to actually lead us to that place of rest, the promised land of freedom that he has for us. Some of the things that are trouble in our lives are pretty small, things that we just confront on a daily basis. You know, maybe we catch a cold. It's no fun. It's troubling. Maybe we are late on a payment. Ugh, I hate when that happens, right? That's trouble, but it's kind of minor. I think one of my favorite things is like you get home with that 20-piece McNugget meal that you're so ready to dive into, and you discover that they only gave you one dipping sauce. Don't they know they gave me 20 McNuggets? I don't know. Some troubles are just small, right? I mean, they're daily little inconveniences. But to be real, there are people here today that are right up against significant trouble. There's some of us that have processed deep, deep trouble in our lives. It's not getting a cold, it's actually having the diagnosis of a disease in our body. It's not being late on a payment, it's actually losing your job and not knowing like where we're gonna be able to go to take care of our babies and to put food on the table, and very deeply troubling. Or maybe, like we're reading in this story, going 3 days into a journey, no water. Hey, and then we find water. Oh, the water is poisoned. Every time we hit trouble, we're at this fork in the road. We have a choice to make. We move towards God, faith-filled obedience, trusting him that he can care for us, even in our trouble, as he's done before, or we move in another direction. When we complain about our circumstance, it shows where our heart is. It shows that we've taken a path away from the Lord. And when we talk about complaining, we're not just talking about being a whiner, right? we're actually seeing that our heart is exposed. But there's this lack of faith that we're dealing with. What are you complaining about? Is there something when we talk about this issue of complaint, is there something that like, there's that thing going on in my story? See, I believe that when we get to that fork in the road, that sometimes we can pause there for a bit. I think God's way okay with that because there are issues in our life that, especially the big ones, where we need to take some time and really process. God, I am facing this thing. I'm finding some complaints coming out of my mouth. So it's indicating something in my heart that I don't want to be there. I'm complaining about my spouse. Ugh. Not really, babe. Not really. But I mean, you know, I mean, in my story, there's been that. I'm complaining about my kids. I'm complaining about the city. Complaining about my neighbors. I'm complaining about my boss. You know, I'm complaining about this and that, a lack of resource and blah, 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 blah. And rather it be something that I bring to God and saying, God, I want to follow you and trust you. Even in this time of trouble, we find ourselves complaining. And I believe that God would give us an opportunity that if we've begun to go down that path, taking another route, and we hear that warning signal of complaint, because I think that's kind of what it is. It's this warning signal, look what's happening in your heart. Look what's, you know, out of the abundance of the heart, the overflow of the heart, the mouth is speaking. So be careful. We read in the New Testament, do everything without complaining. One of the reasons, we're not going to get to this whole passage, but I just got to share this. One, if you just kind of Google that, it says do everything without complaining. It goes on to say that we shine like stars in the universe. And I'm reminded of this word that was given to the Stark family this morning, the contrast, stark contrast. When you think about stars shining in the universe, why do stars shine bright? Because of the contrast. Do you know one of the reasons why people love the Stark kids? It's because their parents are not complainers. They have chosen a path of faithful obedience to the Lord. And because of that, there is something about mom and dad that shine, that the kids have caught on to, that we're going to be a family who trusts the Lord. When we make a decision to not complain, we go into work starting to shine a little brighter. We don't have to even go in there with like a big Jesus button on our shirt. People just know there's a glow about you because you're facing the same problems we were facing last week, but you're a little different. Something's changed. You're going to school. Your last week of school, some of you got the whole summer off now. Some of you are going off to college. But listen, when you get there, when you do not have that spirit of complaint about you, because there's a lot of things to complain about, right? When we're going to school and college, all the kind of things we have to face. When you are living different, there is something that is visibly different about your life. When you're on that path to freedom, saying, God, I just want to have faith-filled obedience even when I face trouble, there's something that becomes light in your life. So when we're in that at that intersection, and here's just one thing I would want to encourage you in before we finish. How do we decide or help ourselves to like move towards the things of God? I think one of the things that we could do when we're facing trouble, and all of you, I think, probably have something in your heart or your mind right now that you're thinking about because you got that warning signal about complaint. What have you been complaining about? Ask Jesus, what do you think about this trouble that I'm in? Jesus, what do you think about it? Not what would Jesus do, not ripping out those bracelets again today, But Jesus, what do you think about this trouble that I'm facing? See, because we know that Jesus faced an incredible amount of trouble in his short life. Man, he faced all kinds of ridicule. He faced all kinds of rejection. He faced the betrayal of one of his closest friends. He obviously faced torture, faced death. He faced all of these different things of trouble and the anguish within his own soul. And yet we know that he is the ultimate picture of what it means to be fully human. And so when he faced various troubles, we can see in his life this vast array of options. Shortest verse in the Bible. Anybody knows what it is? Jesus wept. Maybe recognizing that we're at a place of trouble and not trying to stuff it or like, no, I can't let anybody see that I'm upset because I'm a follower of Jesus. It's gonna like tarnish my glow, right? Somehow the people were really to see what's going on. No, Jesus wept. So when we face trouble, what would Jesus think about that? Maybe it's finding that place of solitude or with intimate friends or my church family where I can just like, no, really, really express all the anguish that's going on in my heart. It's other times when Jesus faced trouble that he flipped over tables of the money changers. So listen, going down God's path when you face trouble does not mean that you just have to like, well, I guess Jesus said turn the other cheek, so I guess I'm just going to keep getting beat up. No, sometimes God says rise up, flip some tables. What does Jesus think about the trouble that you're in? I believe that will help us to begin to process this life of faith. At the very end of the story in Exodus 15, that very last part, let's go ahead and put it back up. Thank you, Karen. He said, if you listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God, so as I reveal, be paying attention to what I'm revealing to you, and do what is right in his sight, obeying his commands and keeping all his decrees, I'm going to go in faith-filled obedience toward the Lord, even in times of trouble. Then I will not make you suffer any of the diseases I sent upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. It's that pathway of faithful obedience that leads us into his rest. I'm so thankful that even when people were complaining, that God in his mercy gave them water. In the final verses of the Bible are these words found in Revelation 22:17. Would you receive these words? Whoever is thirsty, let him come. And whoever wishes, let him take the free gift of the water of life. Whoever is thirsty, what is it that you need? What is it? I mean, with the Israelites, it was literally thirst, 3 days without water. But Jesus is saying, I am available to bring everything that you need. Everything that you need, every essential thing that maybe you feel is lacking from your life, lacking from your story, whatever trouble you find yourself in, what is it that you need? Whoever is thirsty, let him come. Come to me, Jesus says. And whoever wishes, let him take of the free gift of the water of life. That's what he has for us. not just a drink of water that is going to expire in three more days and I'm going to be dying of thirst again. No, the water of life, living water, that would meet every need within your life, that would address every issue of trouble that you're facing. Your body, your mind, your spirit, your relationships, your finances. He just says, come. Come. Come and drink. Come and drink. Come and receive.